1-800-231-8187. At 9, we hear another panel from the Teach-In on Techno-Utopianism and the Fate of the Earth. The speakers are Clive Hamilton on Playing God with Climate, Geoengineering New Skies, Pat Mooney on Nanotechnology and the New Earth, and Debbie Barker on GMOs and Corporate Techno-Food. At 10, Chris Andre hosts Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15, it's Flashpoints, investigative news radio with host Dennis Bernstein. And at 11 on The Recovery Zone, Perry Gruber discusses Copiosis, an alternative socioeconomic system he founded in 2013. Thanks, KABU members, for your generous support. If you're not a KABU member, you can become one by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate Today. And now stay tuned for the news in depth.
KABU News in Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
Hello, welcome back. I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to the Union Edge Laborers Talk Radio. Thank you for tuning in. We enjoy sharing our afternoons with you, that's for sure. We appreciate you hanging out with us. Right now on the phone, we've got Ken Vogel of Politico. Ken, welcome back.
Hey, great to be with you, Charles.
Ken, I'll tell you what, brother, it's always a pleasure to have you on, but, you know, there are times where just numbers get staggering. I mean, staggering. Koch brothers are talking about putting nearly $1 billion into campaigns for 2016. I mean, my goodness gracious sakes alive. Crunching the numbers on that, that would be if, you know, it costs $50,000 to send a kid to college, that's 20,000 kids.
Yeah, another way to look at it in the political sense is looking at what other entities, big entities, that spent a lot of money in politics have spent in recent elections. Well, the Republican National Committee spent $404 million during the 2012 presidential election. So that means in the very next presidential election, the Koch brothers, a private political organization outside of the accountability of the traditional party system, is going to spend more than twice what the official Republican Party spent in the last presidential election. That really shows you, really underscores the migration of money and power away from the candidates and the parties to these outside groups, largely funded by billionaires and multi-millionaires.
Ken, you know, you've been doing this a long time. You're a reporter. You're a chief investigative reporter for Politico. I have to ask, as a layperson, you know, at what point in time is this, we're just buying the political system in the United States? Because I'm pretty sure if you crunch down 435 members of the House and the Senate, that's a lot of money per person.
Yeah, it really is. And the way that this money is going to be spent is going to be key. Frankly, it's difficult to spend that much money and spend it effectively in politics, because there's sort of been a limit to how many ads you could air, how many direct mailers you could put in the mail. Now, of course, there are new ways to spend money in politics, including on digital stuff like social media, email outreach, mobile, even like geo-targeting, where you're like getting a mobile message on your phone based on where you are. That stuff costs money too. But where the Kochs have really seen their value, where they have really seen their niche, is of great interest to your readers, is matching unions and what unions do on the left, the type of ground organizing, knocking on doors, where the right has just been outpaced for decades, largely because of of unions, but also because of environmental groups and other interest groups on the left, where the activist fervor has motivated people to get out and knock on doors and try to convince their neighbors to vote in a way that they see is best for their community and their country. The right really hasn't had that. What the Kochs, I think, are going to do, and this is a question that we're actually exploring today in our follow-up story, is spend a lot of that money on ground organizing and building offices in different states to really try to get out the vote. Now, whether they get what they want or not, you know, your question about buying the government, that's a different story, because the biggest spenders in the last two election cycles, Democrats in 2014, Republicans in 2012, they lost. The other side won. So whether you could convince people or not is a separate question.
Yeah, careful what you ask for. Money. And Kent, you know, here's the deal. I'm an old dog organizer from way back, and trust me, I have knocked on more doors than I care to remember, and I still have calluses on my knuckles. And no, that's not because I drag my knuckles on the ground, folks. But you know, Kent, you hit it on the head, and I don't know if you realize the activists, those people that care about the situation, those people that are engaged, they understand it, they know the nuances of this, that are going out there and knocking on doors. I mean, my goodness gracious sakes alive, if you gave union folks the opportunity to knock on 50 more doors in a day, they'd do that. You know, that's one of the reasons why. Oftentimes people like Dan Duncan in the Northern Virginia Area Labor Federation has lunch to make sure that they get those people back. They make a difference. They make a huge difference. The professional or the contracted temporary will pay you $8 an hour to do this kind of, or $10 an hour to do this. They don't have the fire in the belly for it, and it doesn't work.
Yeah, that might be right, and that was one of the issues that that Republicans had when they first started, when the Kochs, frankly, first started to try to replicate what the left's ground game, what they thought that the left's ground game did for Democrats in 2012, in the run-up to the 2012 presidential election and congressional elections. They did, for the first time, really crack the wild and start paying people to go out and do the door knocking. But I mean, for the most part, these were activists. They were activists who were either like college students who, you know, might have like had a part-time job that they needed money from and needed to sort of fill the gaps if they were going to take off and go knock on doors. Or they were older folks who, maybe also had a part-time job, or maybe just wouldn't think to go out and knock on doors. And when you dangle that money, as much as $15, $18 an hour in some states, you could get those folks to go and knock on the doors. Now, whether they would have the passion or not, I mean, that's certainly something that the critics on the right even questioned. And they said, like, once you start paying people, it's just a financial transaction, and you're not getting the real activists out there. And then if you have folks who are just doing it for the money, that comes through when they knock on your door and you talk to them and they try to convince you to vote for someone. They don't have that passion, and it's harder to make the sell. So that's something that the right struggles with. But to have the infrastructure that even allows to the activists to get out there and knock on the doors, whether they're paid or not, that's something that the Kochs are devoting a lot of time, attention, and money to. And I think you still need that. You still need the infrastructure, whether people are volunteering or whether they're doing it for money. You need to have paid staff out there to organize those people, and you need to have offices and facilities. And so that is a place where they see their niche, and that is a place where they could potentially have more sway than just airing the big flashy TV ads.
You know, Ken, I love this country. I'm very entrepreneurial. Here's what I'm going to do. I know you've got the Koch brothers' telephone number. Tell them I'll do it for them for $500 million.
Okay, yeah, sure. I'm sure that would be a good proposition for them, Charles.
Yeah, no, I don't think they're going to take me up on that. And yeah, you're right. But, you know, let me ask you this. $15 to $18 an hour, where are you getting that number from?
I have actually seen, like, flyers. We wrote in 2012 about this because there were emails that were going out to various activist lists offering that. We ended up posting a bunch of them in a story that we did in the run-up to 2012 that was called GOP Door Knockers. It was like Next Step in Dark Money, GOP Door Knockers, because they were using the secret money to pay these door knockers.
Vote for me, Luke. I am your candidate. Oh, right. Yeah. Okay. So, all right. So, $15 to $18 an hour to go knock on doors. Why, if your people are willing to pay that, why is it a problem we're paying our friends at McDonald's $15 an hour? I don't know. I don't get it. But
yeah, no, that's a good point. But they would, I mean, they're not to, like, their mouth, but they would argue it's a, you know, it's a free market, and that's what it took to get people to go knock on doors, and that's so, you know, somewhere south of that is what it takes in some states to get people to come out for minimum wage jobs. Obviously,
yeah,
there's a bit
of
a flaw in that because it's not a regulated, you know, the door knocking is not regulated in the same way, but that would be where they would come in. It's called Secret Money for GOP Door Knockers, and we posted a lot of the flyers advertising some of this stuff. They were advertising upwards of $15 an hour and dangling perks such as performances by Three Doors Down. They had a concert by the rock band Three Doors Down, drawings to win iPads, and the chance to stay in a posh hotel. This is how they were getting people to, in many cases, travel long distances to go knock on doors in targeted swing districts.
There you go. I guess it's very interesting. Kent, like I said, you've been doing this for a while, and I appreciate your sage wisdom on this. Where do you think this is going to take us?
I think it's going to be an arms race, Charles. I think that the Democrats are going to feel pressure, particularly if Hillary Clinton is the nominee or appears to be unchallenged by any serious viable contender for the Democratic presidential nomination. She and her allies have shown a knack for cobbling together huge sums of money from very wealthy folks to support her philanthropic efforts, her family's philanthropic efforts, her political efforts, and I think that we could see them really rise up and try to, if not match that $889 million, at least get their donors to write large checks so that they can have a political operation that can in some ways go toe-to-toe with the Kochs.
Absolutely. Ken, thank you very much. This is very exciting. It's going to be interesting on how this plays out. That's Ken Vogel of Politico. I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to the Union Edge, Labor's Talk Radio.
Members of the American Postal Workers Union handle more than 165 billion letters and packages a year. That's about 34 million pounds of mail every day. Ever wonder what this costs you as a taxpayer? Millions, tens of millions, hundreds of millions? Not a single cent. The United States Postal Service doesn't run on your tax dollars. It's funded solely by stamps and postage. Brought to you by the men and women of the American Postal Workers Union.
Hello, welcome back. I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to the Union Edge Labor Stock Radio. Thank you for tuning in. We appreciate your company, that's for sure. Hey, folks, go to our website, theunionedge.com, and sign up for our e-activist newsletter. If you're local, your organization needs some help, we'll get the word out for you. If you're willing to help, we'll get the word to you. It's called Solidarity. We're all in this together, and we're all working to improve our communities, that's for sure. Right now, joining us from American Progress, we've got Alan Pike. Alan, welcome back to Union Edge.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it, Alan. We get politicians out there that say just some really outlandish things. And then and most people know that, you know, they're playing to their base. You know, it's, oh, we got to get out there and rile up the base. But sometimes they say things that are really going to be detrimental to their community. And recently, the governor from Maine is talking about throwing people off of welfare. What's going on with that?
It gets a little complicated, so bear with me here. We're talking about a category of welfare recipients, specifically food stamps recipients, who are able-bodied adults who don't have any dependents. And the bureaucratic jargon for those people is ABAWDs, or ABODs. Normally, when the economy is healthy, if you're an able-bodied grown-up without an elder or a child or a disabled relative who you care for, and you want to receive food stamps, you have to demonstrate that you're either working a job or in a job training program for a minimum of 20 hours a week, or you'll be cut off of food stamps after 90 days. You're not allowed to have more than 3 months of food stamps in any three-year period as an able-bodied adult without a dependent, unless you meet that work or job training requirement. That's during normal economic times, though, and when the economy is in dire shape and jobs are scarce, so that the program won't boot people who are willing to work but unable to find work, most states waive that requirement. The federal government decides which states have bad enough economies that they don't need to implement that requirement. And they send a letter out every year saying these are the states and counties that are allowed to waive the work requirements for these able-bodied grownups. And since the recession, almost every state in the union has been doing this for the past 6 years or so now, waiving this work requirement. There were a handful of exceptions, three or four or five states that just never bothered to for whatever reason. But now in the past couple of years, we've started to see a growing number of states, most of them with Republican governors, initiate a sort of premature reinstatement of this work rule. Basically, they get told by the USDA, yep, you're still eligible, your economy's still crappy enough to justify waiving this requirement. You don't have to require this 20 hours of work from people. And in Maine, in New Mexico, in Ohio, in Kansas, the governors of those states have decided to reinstate work requirements on a timeline that the federal government believes is premature, basically before their economy's recovered enough. And so as a result, you've got thousands and thousands of people spotted across the country who are getting booted off of food stamps for reasons that the federal government has deemed to be basically incorrect. You know, they're saying these states should be waiving this requirement, and a handful of states are ignoring that recommendation.
Listen, Alan, we've got to get going. How do we find out more about you and what you write for Progress?
You can find us at thinkprogress.org/economy or on Twitter at TPEconomy.
And if you include us at the Union Edge, we'll retweet that for you, okay?
All right. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to the Union Edge Labor's Talk Radio.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Winter Folk, the annual benefit concert hosted by Sisters of the Road, Saturday, January 31st, 7 o'clock p.m. to 10:30 p.m. at the Aladdin Theater in Portland. This year's featured performer is auto harpist Brian Bowers. Other acts include Portland's